giants emerged from the last few doors, and we headed into the stairwell, taking stairs quickly as we spiraled down, shadows wild and chaotic on the stone walls. It was a relief when we passed the next two floors that housed barracks without being blockaded. Did the deserters have some way of sounding an alarm, alerting each other that their prisoners had escaped? They likely never expected it was possible, but the matriarch and her ilk were incredibly powerful. They might have known the trap in our quarters had been bypassed already. I was dizzy and winded by the time we reached the ground floor. I half expected to find a full contingent of deserter warriors there to crush us, but there were only a few slaves moving down the corridor, in between weak beams of gray dawn light coming through the narrow open windows along the wall. When the slaves saw us, they understandably fled the other way, and we jogged towards an unguarded doorway. The rain was still falling beyond the columns of the entrance, but that sweet, gentle sound was immediately broken by heavy footfalls coming from the stairwell, as a large troop of angry deserters closed in on us. We ran. As we cleared the columns, the falling rain was more than cleansing. It signified salvation. Potential salvation. That is, if I was right about the deserters being blinded by it. If I was wrong, we would all be dead in moments. The vicinity around the towering round keep was empty, just as it had been during the rain before. But that didn't necessarily prove anything. I swallowed hard, hoping I hadn't been a horrendous fool to suggest using the rain for cover. Braelar ordered Sildoon to bring Nastenzia to the front. Benk grabbed her by the arm and dragged her forward. Braelar turned to her and said, "Our horses. They are nearby, yes, in the Ruder pens. Direct us." Nastenzia was still pale and shaken and didn't respond, staring off into the rain. Braelar stepped directly in front of her. "If we are cornered in Roxtiniac, and I see the matriarch or any of her ilk, I will do one last thing before they strike us down, and that is slit your throat. So, I ask again, where are our horses?" She blinked, then rubbed at her eyes, as if just now noticing the raindrops collecting on her lashes. "Yes, the pens, the royal pens, that is, I believe so, I believe they took your beasts there. I have not seen them myself. It isn't far from here, to the east." She shook her head. "But..."
"Good enough." He turned to his troops. "We move out."
We set off at a jog, not wanting to run headfirst into any opposition, but not wanting to dawdle if there was pursuit. I looked over my shoulder and saw at least a dozen deserters standing just inside the columns, protected from the rain, and wondered if they could sense us at all, or if there was some other reason prohibiting them from stepping out of the keep to destroy us. One or two started to walk out, looking disoriented, taking a few hesitant steps before retreating for cover. We jogged down a broad avenue, and while there were no deserters out, we did see a man carrying several clay jugs on a stick balanced on his shoulders. He saw a group of armed humans, dropped his stick, and ran away from us and his shattered jugs. Vinduro said,
"Gods, no wonder the cowards were so easy to plague and conquer."
I might have countered that even the well-trained and armed elite of the Sildoon weren't exactly putting up much opposition either, and until very recently considered the deserters gods as well, which tended to keep insurrection to a dull roar. But I was nearly out of breath, and it wouldn't have done any good anyway. So I just continued to run, my case bouncing on my back, my quiver doing the same on my hip, my gambeson growing heavier with each drop of rain, as I kept the crossbow pointed up into the gray, drizzly sky, and prayed to whatever gods might be listening that the rain would fall long enough for us to escape this terrible place. We headed down a narrower cross street, encountering no one else, when we came to the huge barn that Nastenzia said housed the Ruder pens. As Morgan grabbed a handle and pulled a large door as it began to slide down a track, I was certain we would find only dead horses, or tack and harness, or nothing at all save the giant rooters staring stupidly at us. But I heard a distant whinny from somewhere deep inside. The captain led us through the opening and out of the rain, posting two men at the door.
While our eyes adjusted to the gloom, the usual smells assaulted us. Horseshit, hay, and a musky stench that was so heavy, it might as well have been a cloud, which I assumed was due to the rooters, who were bellowing from somewhere in the barn. Four stable boys, stable slaves, I had to remind myself, saw us enter. One raised his arms above his head, two began backing away, and the fourth stared, motionless. Several crossbows were trained on them. Braylar called out, "We have no wish to," and then cursed and stopped himself. He turned to Nastenzia. "Tell them they will live, provided they do as commanded." Nastenzia turned and gave the captain a hard look.
"They are only boys," she said, with disdain.
Braylar met her glare for glare.
"And they will only be dead boys if you do not encourage them to comply."
It struck me then how inured to the Sildunian methods I'd become, that she was the first to object to them, whereas I simply accepted them for what they were. The Focus spoke to the four slaves, and the eldest stepped forward and replied in that oddly guttural and still sibilant deserter tongue, then pointed back beyond the large rooter pens. Nastenzia spoke to Braylar again in Sildunian.
"Your beasts are in the back. They have not gone near them."
Maldus growled.
"They better have plaguing fed them, or I don't give two plaguing shits how compliant they are. They'll still be dead."
Nastenzia began to reply, but Braylar cut her off.
"And the saddles? Bridles?"
She looked at him blankly, and he tried again, spitting each word out.
"The gear they had on them, yes? Where is it?"
Nastenzia spoke to the slaves again, and the eldest pointed towards the rear of the barn. She turned to the captain.
"Everything was stripped off them, put in an empty pen at the back."
Braylar addressed his men.
"Find your harness, find your horses, and mount up. We will have some spare mounts now, so bring those as well. And ensure our silver-haired matron here does not need to run alongside."
He looked at Nastenzia.
"Have those jittery lads assist us. The sooner we ride out of here, the sooner they can return to shoveling rooter shit and being tormented by their overlords. Understood?"
She nodded and relayed the order, presumably, and everyone moved out. I walked past caged wagons, wondering which one they had used to haul us here, and several pens of hulking rooters, most of which ignored us, save for a bull that snorted and bellowed and looked ready to charge. Our horses were all in three large pens, stomping nervously or excitedly as we approached. It was hard to be certain. I wanted to be sure my surly beast was among them, but followed everyone else's lead in retrieving saddle and kit first, relieved to see that the untranslated pages were still in packs. The slave boys moved among us, not sure what to do, looking like they were about to brown their breeches at any moment, and the stoic Nastenzia seemed stiffer than usual, no doubt not looking forward to sitting on a strange creature for the first time. I hauled the saddle back, but didn't see my horse right away, but as others found theirs and narrowed the field, I saw her near the back. I'd never taken to riding, but seeing her again, the prospect of escaping here became a real thing, and it was hard to remember being happier. I patted her muzzle and stroked her neck and would have kissed her if her breath had been sweeter. It would have earned less scorn than kissing Scalana. I was climbing up and throwing my leg over when one of the Sildun who had been at the front of the barn came running up and said,
"Big company of deserters coming this way, Cap."
Braylar threw me a hostile look before replying,
"Oh? I was under the impression that navigating in the rain would be problematic for them."
The soldier replied,
"They got some of them legless basket-riding bastards on their backs, at least 15 of those, directing them, and another 20 or so deserters falling in behind, not walking real confident, but those prickless wonders are leading them through the sprinkle."
Whatever elation I felt was snuffed out like a candle between wet fingers, as Morgan called out,
"We just ride around them, or over them."
Maldus replied,
"You sure as shit got a tiny brain in that massive skull. They got over 40. Even if they're half blind, they can block the avenue off. No riding around that."
Another avenue, then. Just take another one.
And if that one's full of deserters, too?
As Morgan said.
Then we shoot the hell out of them. What other choice we got, mushrooms? You want a plaguing surrender?
Before Muldus could reply, Vindiro said,
The Rudis.
Everyone looked at him, and he said,
Drive them out in front of us. A stampede. Run the deserters over, or leastwise out of the way. Clear a path. We ride after them, break for the gate once we get through.
Sofchin said, That could work, Bray. She gave a wicked smile. And if nothing else, how often do you get to see a Rooter stampede? Braylar looked around until he spotted Nastenzia sitting rigidly on her horse.
Tell the boys to open the pens, herd the Rooters towards the door, and we'll handle the rest.
The slaves seemed to sense what we intended and looked more frightened than before. Even the eldest who spoke for the rest was pale as he replied to her. Nastenzia resumed Sildunian.
Their masters will be furious if they allow anything to happen to the Rooters. They might kill them.
Braylar pointed his crossbow at the closest stable boy.
But we will kill them if they don't. Do you see the difference? Make it very clear to them. Tell them to herd these beasts to the entrance and prepare to go them out the door on my command.
Nastenzia's face was a mass of quivering frown lines, but she continued her conversation with the boys as Braylar spoke to his men.
On my signal, we will drive them out before us. They are already uncomfortable enough around the horses, but the creatures might need some additional encouragement to adopt the proper speed for a true stampede. But we do not kill any. Every raging Rooter is our ally. Understood?
The men all nodded or said aye as the boys ran ahead to unlock the pens. They looked so small and fragile, moving amongst the enormous gray creatures. I worried that any attempt to set the animals stampeding was going to result in at least one or two of the slaves being crushed as well. But as harsh and brutally pragmatic as Braylar and his men were, I understood now that the safety of the jackals outweighed everything else that might be dropped on the scales. Some of the Rooters protested loudly, snorting, bellowing, thick purple tongues lolling. But, ironically enough, the boys seemed to know how to handle these creatures with skill and confidence, unlike the smaller horses that terrified them simply by being alien. The slaves used long goads to slap the thick hides and move them out of the pens, past the wagons, and towards the entrance, maintaining the correct distance to herd them without endangering themselves overmuch in the process. Yet. The Sildun followed on horseback, also keen to maintain some distance, although the mere presence of the foreign beasts behind them was enough to make the Rooters uneasy. I tried not to think about what would happen if the Rooters turned and charged us. There was simply nowhere to run. We'd be dead before having a chance to even face the deserters out in the rainy streets of Roxtiniac. The boys knew their job and kept the Rooters moving ahead. But the huge beasts at the fore were closing in on the half-open door. And then there was no telling how they might behave once goaded. Braylar called ahead to the two Sildun keeping watch.
The deserters, how far now?
A jackal, not much older than the slave boys, tore his eyes off the approaching herd of Rooters and looked out the crack, then reported,
Close. Real close. 80 yards. Maybe 70.
Very good, the captain replied.
The soldier nodded quickly, though with Rooters nearly to him and a huge party of deserters coming from the other direction, I imagined he didn't really share that sentiment.
Braylar said, When I give the word, pull the doors open wide as they go, and then get behind a wagon and wait for the herd to pass by. Once they do, Benk has your horse.
The Sildun nodded again, and Braylar yelled,
Nastenzia, when those doors fly open,
the boys will move the herd through them, yes.
No, he amended, not move, drive. They must not amble down the avenue looking for something leafy to munch on. They need to be driven. Do you understand?
She gave a curt nod and spoke to the stable hands again in that odd language. Braylar cupped his hands to his mouth and shouted,
"Pull, soldier! Now!"
The Sildoon pulled the doors, running them down the tracks as quickly as he could, and then dodging to the side to hide behind the wagon. The boys took their cue and slapped the flanks of the rooters at the rear of the herd with their goads. The beasts roared protest, but barely moved. The boys tried again, whipping the thick, pebbly hides more, but it still didn't have the desired effect. As the rooters in the front started to slowly step through the door and into the light rain, Braylar raised his hand and lowered it quickly, and several crossbows discharged. The bolts struck three rooters at the back end, and while they didn't penetrate deeply, it was enough to send them forward quickly, bellowing. Braylar gave the signal again, and four more bolts shot out. This time the rooters roared and charged, snapping their big square teeth on the flanks of the beasts ahead of them. The effect cascaded, the rooters at the rear rushing forward, biting and slamming their bulbous domed heads into the rooters in their way, all of them bellowing in fear or anger. But one smaller rooter, still nearly the size of a normal wagon and with a single bolt sticking into its hindquarters, did not try to run out of the barn, but turned instead to face whatever was tormenting it. The closest thing it saw was one of the boys with a goad in his hand. The rooter lowered its huge head and charged, legs as thick as trees propelling it across the shadow of the barn. The boy froze as the others screamed at him to run, and when he finally regained his wits and started to turn, it was too late. The rooter struck him in the lower back with its domed skull and sent him flailing over some wooden railings into a pen, limbs flying. Crossbow bolts slammed into the rooter's side, but it was fixated on the boy and blasted through the railing after him. Braylar shouted, "Ride!" and squeezed his horse with his legs and got it moving in a hurry. The other Sildoon obeyed, and we were all doing the same, galloping out of the barn. I turned to my right and saw the huge humped back of the rooter in the pen as I flew past, and tried to block out the boys' screams. We raced out of the barn and into the rain, with the rooters rushing down the avenue ahead of us. And it was a good thing they were. The men on the backs of the deserters were pointing, shouting, and throwing javelins at the beasts. Most of those bounced off the flanks of the stampeding rooters or missed completely, but they would have dented or torn through any of our armor. Some javelins did strike home and stick, but the rooters were too enraged now to think about turning back, and they lowered their heads and charged. The deserters swung their weapons in front of them, and some shuffled off to the side, clearly disoriented by the rain. They made easy targets for the rampaging rooters, who used their thick domed heads like rams. Even the massive deserters were no match for those colossal beasts, and they went down or were thrown into the grooved building facades on either side of the avenue. The Sildoon galloped after the rooters, shooting any deserters as they blew past, and then spanning with the devil's claws. Several deserters were only knocked out of the way by the rooters, not crushed or trampled under hoof, but they were still mostly blind, and while some swung their great clubs at us, most of them missed completely. But one connected with a passing Sildoon, impaling his shoulder and flinging the man out of his saddle. I hoped he was dead, because anyone stopping to help him would be. One of the legless humans on the back of a deserter called out, surely telling the eyeless giant where we were. I saw his face under his plumed helmet, and we locked eyes for a brief moment. The man reached for a javelin in the quiver on the side of the barrel as the deserter slowly stepped forward, uncertain, head cocked to the side, listening, trying to get a fix on the passing horseman. I lifted my crossbow, sighted down the stock as best I could on a moving horse, which was to say hardly at all, and squeezed the long steel trigger as the man reared back to throw his javelin. I'd been aiming for the javelin thrower, but the bolt struck the deserter square in the shoulder. The giant flinched just enough to upset the throw, and the javelin sailed over my head. Then I was racing past, dodging a deserter body in the puddles, and another Sildoon who was slowly crawling nowhere, blood pouring out of three holes in his chest. Chapter 25. We rode through some side streets, only occasionally encountering some men or women trudging through the rain and mud, who jumped into alleys or doorways, or pressed themselves against walls as we rode past. It was as if we were somehow worse than their memory-sucking overlords who bred them and kept their population tightly controlled. If they were smart, they would have begged to ride with us, although they would have been denied. As we navigated the streets, I saw the Sildoon ahead of me holding the reins to Nastenzia's mount. She was gripping the saddle with white fingers, rocking wildly. I saw her looking back towards Vrilinka's keep more than once, though whether she was hoping for more pursuit or dreading it, I couldn't say. The stoicism hadn't crumbled completely, but it was clear it was cracked, and there was nothing but terror underneath. But there were no more deserters, and I began to hope we'd met the only opposition we were going to encounter before reaching the gate and Vale immediately beyond. Braelar halted us briefly and ordered Nastenzia brought forward. Sofchin wheeled her horse around to face her. When we clear the gate, we need to pass through the Vale Dome. If we do not, cannot, my brother here won't have a chance to kill you, as I will do it myself. If there are any of the matriarch's ilk here, I can resist them long enough to ensure you bleed to death on the stones. Do you understand? Nastenzia recovered some of her composure and haughty bearing. I understand you perfectly, and I told you, I can only assist you in marking your warriors once we are close enough to the gate. When we are there, I will augment your attempts to do so and guide you, as I did in the keep. I am not sure what else you would like me to say, but please, threaten some more. Braelar clenched and unclenched a fist.
And you are certain I can't simply walk us through with a flail?
Nastenzia looked at him as if he were a child asking the same question for the 40th time, and expecting a different answer. I do not know that for certain. I did not create the veil. While it has a similar function as what you refer to as the God Veil, the design is different. Could you try? Yes. Could that actually kill you on the spot? Yes. Or it might do nothing. But I doubt very much that it would allow you to pass. The captain turned and urged his horse forward again, cantering down the street, crossbow up, head on a pivot, and the rest of the Sildoon did the same. As we rounded a multi-level terraced garden, we saw the gate ahead. It was far less fortified than anything on the other side of the Godvale, so we wouldn't have to contend with portcullises or moats or anything else. But it didn't matter. There was a line of deserters gathered in the rain in front of the gate. Several on either end had legless javelin throwers on their backs, as did some in the center of the line, and the rest of the deserters wielded their great clubs or the staff slings they'd used out on the plain. And though it was hard to tell from that distance, I was relatively sure there was a thin female deserter in robes in the middle of the line. The javelin throwers started pointing in our direction, and though the deserters were still stymied by the rain, they all turned towards us, and the slingers cocked their long staves back. With their incredible strength, their range outdistanced our crossbows, and while the rain helped cloak us, it could also foul the composite crossbows if they were subjected to water too long, and no one had any time to apply fat to the strings to protect them. Braelar slowed the company long enough to spin and face us.
We ride fast and hard. Their shots will come before we close, but when we are in range, take out the javelin throwers. Those are their eyes. We do that, and they're essentially blind again. These deserters are our final obstacle, but we must take them out to buy us time to go through the gate.
He looked directly at Sofchian.
Do you have enough strength to overwhelm them as you did in the keep and still escort us through their veil?
Sofchian replied, I will just have to, won't I? I'm sure under the mail drape, Braelar Twitch smiled as he said,
Yes, yes, you will.
One of the jackals asked, What about the she-bitch there in the skirts? What do we do about her?
Braelar replied, We don't play favorites just because someone forgot to bring a weapon to a battle.
There were some chuckles at that, but the same soldier said,
What I meant to ask, Cap, is,
I know precisely what you meant to ask. We hope she cannot attack us without being able to adequately target us.
And if she can?
Muldus turned and shouted,
If she can, you dumb horse cunt, then this will be the shortest plaguing fight ever. Any other plaguing idiot questions anybody is just dying to ask?
The captain nodded at Muldus and then addressed the full company.
Once we dispatch the legless bastards, keep moving, and do not close with the deserters unless absolutely necessary. We blind them, whittle them down, and then take them out when the odds tip in our favor.
He looked up at the dark clouds.
It is not an especially good day for crossbows. It might be among the worst, truly. But it is still our day. We kill these giant horse-uns and win free.
Vinduro muttered,
Just once it would be nice to casually stroll out of a city without having to kill everybody.
I lifted the flap on my quiver, checked the crossbow, and silently agreed. We started forward with Braelar setting the pace, first at a trot, and then picking up speed. I noticed something on the cobblestones, and then several somethings, and had the incongruous realization that there were worms everywhere, drowned out by the rain, now getting squished under our horses' hooves. Then something whizzed by close, and then on the other side, above my head, though I couldn't see either. Most of the shots missed the mark, as we were still at the edge of their range, and they were using directional firing rather than trying to strike individual targets. But one or two lead balls ricocheted off a helm or some lamellar plates. I ducked as low as I could, silently apologizing to my horse for using its neck for cover, and kept riding as more shot flew by. Luckily, the staff slingers were still shooting blind, and their weapons were not as quick to loose as bows, but they had amazing range, and a few moments later, another lead shot hit a rider in front of me in the chest or shoulder. He nearly dropped his crossbow and wobbled in his saddle, slowing for a moment, and I saw a large hole in his burnie that was leaking blood that he reached up to touch. But I galloped past before seeing how badly injured he was. The Sildoon changed direction, crossing back and forth from one side of the street to the other as they galloped on, doing their best to avoid the next volley of lead, and then they rose up almost in unison, tall in the stirrups, as they took aim with their crossbows and loosed. I couldn't track the bolts in the rain, but I saw at least three javelin throwers jerk back in their baskets and drop out of view, dead or badly injured. Which was remarkable, given that the shooters were on moving horses and the targets mostly hidden behind the cover of deserters. The initial lead volleys had been arcing at a pretty high trajectory, but they came in mostly flat now, the balls zinging past, clattering off pale plaster, armor, the stones. A rider ahead of me went down when his horse was struck, crashing into the wall of a building and tumbling forward in a horrible mass of limbs that must have been breaking. I rose up as best I could in the saddle, knowing I had no chance of hitting a javelin thrower, but doing my best to aim for the deserter in the robes. The bolt flew free, and while it didn't hit her, it made her jump and step back, and that was something. I had to slow as I spanned the crossbow, lacking the skill and dexterity that came with hundreds of hours of practice, and I held my breath as I did, riding as close to a wall as I could, hoping a lead ball didn't suddenly rip through my chest or kill my horse. When I looked up again, the Sildoon were far ahead of me, so I urged my horse on and nearly fell out of the saddle as she bolted forward. Several javelin throwers were dead or badly injured as the Sildoon pulled up and wheeled around in a somewhat crowded version of the rolling gear formation Braelar and his men had performed against the Hornmen. They rode in, curling off just outside of javelin range, shot, and retreated. But the staff slings kept whipping forward, and while the deserters were still mostly blinded by the rain and unable to aim properly, they knew which direction to loose the lead, and either had some idea where the Sildoon were ahead of them, or managed to get lucky, as three more soldiers went down, one crawling towards a building, the other two immobile in the street. When the deserters recognized that the Sildoon weren't riding close enough to engage them, they started forward slowly, using the remaining javelin throwers for directions, great clubs at the ready. They didn't have any cohesion, but they were coming. The thin wielder stayed near the rear, but followed the surging line of deserters as well, hands outstretched, but turning her head this way and that, looking uncertain. One Sildoon had the same idea I did and tried to take her out, riding closer than the rest and into range of javelins, his crossbow up near his chin as he dodged one javelin and took aim. The bolt flew free and struck the female deserter in the shoulder. But as the Sildoon turned and started retreating, a deserter had run up several more paces to give his thrower a better shot. And that javelin arced through the air and struck the Sildoon in the small of the back. The soldier slumped over his horse, and the animal kept galloping. Another Sildoon tried to grab the reins, but the beast had other ideas and raced between the soldiers, carrying the badly wounded or dead man along with him. I raised my crossbow as I slowed down, careful to stay well out of range, and shot at the wielder again as well, but hit a deserter in front of her instead. A lead shot rang off the side of my helm, though it at least partially struck the brim and saved me from losing my head entirely. I still felt like I'd been hit in the head with a maul and went black for several moments. When I opened my eyes again, ears ringing, vision blurry, I realized my horse had slowed but hadn't changed direction. The staggered line of deserters was 50 yards away and moving forward, inexorably. Two more lead balls whizzed nearby, and I was about to jerk the reins and give the horse my heels when several Sildoon rode by, Braelar and his officers among them. Javelins flew and more lead shot, but none hit the mark. Several Sildoon loosed their crossbows, and I saw one more javelin thrower slump back against the basket, a bolt in his face under the brim of his plumed helm. But the Sildoon were only opening the way for Sofjian. She had her arms outstretched, the Rancer held vertically in one of them, and stopped about 20 yards from the closest deserter. A javelin flew over her right shoulder, nearly striking her, and then two more Sildoon shot at the thrower, at least one bolt hitting him and causing him to take cover behind the bulk of the deserter. The rain was slowing, and the giants were close enough now that they must have been able to discern outlines as several charged at Sofjian, their huge limbs churning, water and mud spraying with each thunderous step. She maintained her position, head tilted up, face in the rain, and the Sildoon halted around her, loosing the last of their bolts before they would have to ride off or draw their sidearms. I fumbled with my quiver, drawing a bolt and tried to work the devil's claw, my hands seemingly weighed down with iron shackles, my arms moving slowly, ears still ringing from the lead shot. I looked up and saw Sofjian tense, fearing the worst, that the female deserter had countered her, or that she was hit by a staff slinger. But then the deserters in the line stopped and then reeled, some dropping to their knees, others moving even more slowly than me, aimlessly, drifting away from the Memrodon. The Sildoon closed in on them, shooting, reloading, shooting. Even when the deserters were hit several times, bolts sticking out every which way, they didn't react except to lurch forward or collapse. One by one they fell as the Sildoon circled and shot them. The female deserter strode forward, the front of her robes a pink stain as rain diluted the blood dripping out her wound, and while she was unsteady on her feet, the thin giant raised her good arm, and suddenly Sofjian lurched to the side, dropping her Rancer. A bolt took the wielder in the chest, and she dropped as well. But the damage was done. Several deserters stood upright again now that Sofjian's hold on them was broken, and one swiped his great club at a passing Sildoon, catching him in the midsection and catapulting him out of the saddle. Another deserter swung at a horseman and missed, still disoriented or not seeing his opponent clearly, but pivoted and caved in the helm of another Sildoon with his backswing, as the soldier tried to ride past. The Sildoon rode off in all directions, putting distance between them and the remaining giants as they spanned their crossbows, all save Asmorgon, who charged ahead, his polearm in both hands angled back down the side of his horse. he galloped past one of the deserters and used the long blade to slice a deep gash across the giant's thigh, just below a triangular brass plate. The deserter was swinging his club, but was too slow, and then went down hard, his leg failing. All the javelin throwers were dead, so even though two deserters still had their staff slings, they seemed to have given up using them to discharge lead and were wielding them just like quarterstaffs as they moved off in the direction of the mounted jackals. Having taken out the ranged weapons or rendered them mostly useless, and with the wielder down, the Sildoon could have simply ridden circles around them, filling the giants full of bolts until they were dead or weak enough to finish off. But one soldier called out to Braelar and Muldus and got their attention, then pointed back in the direction of the center of the city and the round keep. Another battalion of deserters was coming, guided by more half-men javelin throwers, and with another wielder in their midst. The captain ordered us to break for the gate. We were out of time. Vinduro rode up alongside Sofjian, who was still in the saddle, but only barely, head forward, chin on her chest, and in danger of falling over at any moment. It was a wonder she hadn't already. Braelar yelled,
"Wake her!"
Vinduro shook her shoulder, and that did nothing except nearly unhorse her. He grabbed her arm and shouted at her, and that had no discernible effect either. The young lieutenant looked at his captain and then grabbed Sofjian firmly and slapped her across the face with the back of his hand. Sofjian's head finally rose up from her chest, but she looked drunk, barely responsive. Vinduro wrenched her around, to no real effect. Then he pulled a costrel off his saddle, uncorked it, tilted her face up, and poured whatever fluid was there down her throat. She sputtered and threw her head side to side, then suddenly seemed more coherent as she grabbed his wrist and drew her soroka. Vinduro said,
"Sorry about that, but we got to leave. Oh, and you dropped your big sticker."
He handed her the rancer. The Sildoon assembled near the captain, and I rode over and joined them as well. He looked at the half-dozen deserters still in the street further up, bleeding and wounded and unguided, but still very dangerous, slowly making their way towards us, though the light rain was still causing them difficulty. Then Braelar pointed to the approaching battalion.
"We have little time, and less. So, we ride around those hulking bastards who have not obliged us by dying yet, and make a run for the gate. They will likely shamble in pursuit. So while Sofjian prepares us to exit this wretched city, we will form up and shoot them to pieces. Then we ride out, never to return. Yes?"
Everyone nodded. Braelar looked at the Sildoon bodies littering the street and said,
"If you see any survivors, get them on the spare horses."
As Morgan asked, rumbling like thunder,
"And if they ain't fit to ride?"
Braelar gave him a long, hooded look before replying,
"Give them mercy. We leave no one for the deserters to torture or slaughter."
The remaining jackals started forward down the wet street, crossbows again spanned and at the ready, save for Asmorgon and Sofjian. I still felt woozy as we rode forward, and prayed no one had to dispatch a broken or dying Sildoon soldier, as that would surely make me throw up. Luckily, the deserters weren't much for half measures. If they struck you cleanly, there was an excellent chance you were dead. We picked up speed, and the deserters raised their weapons, hearing the hooves on the wet stones, but no horsemen came close enough to strike down. Everyone shot a bolt, including me, though I missed badly, and I looked over my shoulder as we flew past. One more deserter fell backwards, with two bolts in its throat. The wooden gate was still open, so that was something, but the veil beyond was shimmering. Braelar looked at his sister.
"Ready, then?"
Sofjian was pale, and the lightning bolt vein was pulsing in her forehead, but she nodded. "This would have been a pointless exercise otherwise, Bray." She stayed in the saddle 10 paces from the veil and called Nastenzia over, who looked more shaken than anyone, despite not suffering a single wound. Sofjian said, "I will mark them as before,
correct?
Nastenza replied.
Yes, as before. Though I will need to help you. The mark must go deeper. Much deeper. If we do not embed it, I cannot promise what will happen.
Sofjin gave the focus a grim look.
I can promise what will happen if we fail. We begin.
The first two Sildoon rode up, and Sofjin raised her hands and closed her eyes. Nastenza did the same. Several moments crawled by, and I looked back down the main avenue, though I turned my head too quickly and had to bite back bile and close my eyes for a moment. When I opened them, I saw the broken deserters coming for us, and heard the heavy twang of the crossbows all around. One by one, they fell, and still the rest came on, either not realizing how depleted their force was, or driven by compulsions that made no sense to a human mind. As I took aim, I heard Sofjin say,
Go.
The pair of Sildoon looked at Braelar, but she repeated the order.
I believe I said you are ready. Go now.
Braelar nodded, and the Sildoon rode forward. I wasn't the only one who watched to be sure they didn't drop dead on the spot, but they disappeared into the woven, shifting whorls of air beyond the gate. The captain shouted,
Enough, you gaping twats! Loose! Loose, plague you!
The remaining Sildoon shot their crossbows and began spanning as more approaching deserters dropped, huge bodies slumping to the cobblestones. When half the remaining company had parted the veil, the last of the nearest deserters lay in a puddle of blood 20 paces away. But the other battalion was coming, guided by the javelin throwers, still beyond the range of lead balls, but not by much, and their force was at full strength. We could not possibly survive an assault, especially with two of our own leaving at a time. Braelar finished spanning his bow and slapped the devil's claw on the stock.
By all means, sister, do take your sweet time.
She didn't reply, but began preparing the next pair to leave. There were only 8 of us left when the first lead ball struck the wall 10 feet above us, raining plaster down. Sofjin ushered another pair of Sildoon forward. Braelar looked at Muldus.
You, Ven next, then Asmorgon and Arki.
Muldus started to shake his head, but Braelar stopped him before he could say anything.
That is a direct order. Go now.
Cap, you...
I shouldn't have to suffer insolence at every turn. I will be right behind you.
Another lead shot struck 10 paces to our left, followed by another hitting the cobblestones in front of us, spraying water and bouncing forward and nearly spooking Vendora's horse. Braelar said,
Now, Lieutenant, unless you want me to get shot to death.
Muldus swore and grabbed his reins and headed to the gate, with Vendora following. Braelar looked at me.
My apologies for not sending you through sooner, Arki, but...
Jackals first, I said.
What I was going to say was, I didn't even recognize you.
He tilted his head in the direction of more lead striking, then looked at the last as Morgan.
Keep moving, the both of you, but in no pattern. The cockless javelin chuckers are spotting for them, so let's make their jobs a bit more difficult at least, yes?
We all started off in different directions as more lead struck the walls and gate around us, and it reminded me of dwarves at a fair, running back and forth as paying patrons threw rotten fruit at them. Only, if we got hit now, it would be us splatted on the stones. Several more lead balls ricocheted off the wall and street around us as we rode back and forth. Muldus and Vendoro went through the veil, and Braelar turned to me.
Now you and...
A lead ball caught the edge of the male Aventail on his helm. Had it struck cleanly, it would have crushed his throat. But even a glancing blow left him dazed for a moment. Braelar turned and shot his crossbow high in the air to achieve the greatest arc, then threw the strap over his shoulder as he pulled his shield off the saddle.
Go, both of you, now.
I rode up to the gate with Asmorgon, and as before on the other side, I didn't experience much as Sofjin lifted her shaky hands and held them alongside my face, except the waves of nausea and dizziness I was already battling. two lead shots struck nearby. Sofjian didn't waver, but Nastenzia ducked and looked around. Sofjian hissed, "Concentrate, you stupid wretch." Nastenzia closed her eyes again and lifted her hands. I suddenly felt an impact on my back, as if I'd been hit by a mace, and nearly fell out of my saddle. And then Sofjian ushered us through. The Sildoon were all gathered 50 yards from the vale, and we rode over to them. I cursed every step my horse took, willing myself not to vomit, and hoping I didn't have a lead shot in my lung. I didn't see any exit wound. Then remembered the writing case on my back. The thick brass panels might have saved my life. No one said a word as we all waited, and it seemed too long. Much too long. Muldus pulled his Aventail drape up, turned, and spit into the grass near the road, and several Sildoon looked around nervously. Vinduro said, "Plague me, do you think?" But then two more lead balls flew through the veil, followed immediately by Braelar, his sister, and Nastenzia. He rode up to us and said,
"Ride, you horsons, ride!"
Chapter 26. We rode clear of the veiled city, and it was a good thing I wasn't in command, as it would have kept us at a wild gallop until every horse came up lame while Roxtiniac was still on the horizon. But Braelar maintained a measured pace, hooves pounding in the mud as we headed west, but at a controlled trot as the miles came and went, breaking on occasion to rest the animals, and then hopping back in the saddle as night came on. If there was any pursuit, the drizzle continued to come down and thwart them for several hours, finally reduced to nothing more than a fine mist as the clouds broke free and showed the moon racing between them. We rode through the night, and the captain resumed his normal protocol of ordering scouts behind and riding far ahead. But we had established a solid enough lead that Braelar finally called a longer halt a few hours before dawn. After removing my saddle and caring for my horse with eyes half closed and muscles aching, I was about to collapse when I felt an especially sharp pain in my back and remembered the shot that nearly did me in. I pulled my riding case off to inspect it. Even though the shot had come in at an angle, the lead ball still punctured one side, which was hardly thin, tearing through the brass panel as if it were glass or gossamer. I flipped the case around, and the other side was dented where I'd felt the impact, but the shot hadn't made it out the other panel. I undid the clasp and opened the case and saw a hole through a stack of papers inside. The lead ball was deformed and flattened, pressed up against the last few sheets. Vinduro was walking by as I pried the flattened lead out, careful to shield the pages and materials from what remained of the misting rain. He gave me a blank look.
"Lousy time to write, ain't it?"
I explained what happened and showed him the case, and we marveled at it together as he stuck his finger through the hole on the outside. Then he whistled and said,
"Maybe we ought to start making armor out of thick paper, eh?"
He walked off, chuckling. I didn't have the energy. I nearly tumbled onto the least soaked ground I could find, laid back against the saddle, clutched a blanket around me to try to stay warm and dry, and then almost immediately slipped into black slumber. A battalion of approaching deserters couldn't have woken me. But sometime before dawn, Braelar's sharp tongue did. He ordered us to break our fast quickly and get back in the saddle. When we were all up and moving again, the sun joined us. The rain clouds had scattered, leaving behind wispy barges gently floating, suffused with the softest, sweetest colors imaginable. The pastels of comforting flowers and delicate gowns, confectioner's delights, and exotic fruits. Vinduro was riding ahead of me alongside Muldus, and I saw him tilt his head up and say,
"Those deserted bastards might be bigger, more powerful, maybe even smarter."
"Definitely smarter," Sofjian said. Vinduro continued, undeterred.
"But they'll never be able to take in something like this. We got that over those giant horned horsons, at least. They'll never see a sunrise."
Rudgie was behind me as she said,
"Or their own plaguing shadows, for that matter. Or,
or the color of their shit, Maldus finished. The only thing I care about them seeing or sensing, or whatever it is they plaguing do, is the edge of my blade as I cut them down and murder them into bits.
As Morgon turned around in his saddle,
"We're riding the wrong way to do that, mushrooms,"
Muldoon said.
"Now, sure. Got no advantage, no chance. But someday, I'm going to come back here and kill every damn deserter we come across."
As Morgon rumbled a laugh,
"You are you? Cap in on that plan? Or that just you bibble-babbling away on your lonesome?"
Muldoon turned and spit, and seemed to be regaining some control of his lips and mouth, as he didn't splatter himself with it at all.
"Every plaguing one. I don't care how, but I'm doing it."
Sofjian said, "My, my, but that's an ambitious list. First, we have to cross the Godvale again and slaughter Sinead and every leopard we come nose to nose with. And then we have to come back to this side and eradicate a race of massive near-gods whose only apparent limitation is that rain befuddles them and they can't see rainbows after."
Muldoon slapped the helm hanging on his saddle.
"There ain't anything godly about those giant horse cunts, and nobody asked you for help or even invited your plaguing input."
Vinduro shook his head. "And you say I've been kicked in the head too many times by a horse?" There was some muted chuckling from Rudgie, and I smiled as well. But it was short-lived. Braelar silenced us with,
"Now that the rain is gone, and likely for good, we'd best hope our lead suffices. They overtook us before. They can do so again."
Once again, there was a heaviness hanging in the air. Even if Muldus's dreams of bloody vengeance weren't remotely realistic, the reasons he had them were all too real and terrible. Braelar's company had been cut down by 2/3 at the hands of the Imperials and then the deserters. What began as a small army was now only a largish band, and it was too much to think on all the men and women who'd been lost already. And yet, that's all that seemed to occupy Muldus's mind, mile after mile. Maybe all that sustained him. That was one, and possibly the only, distinct advantage to being on the edge of the company. No matter how close I rode to the retinue, I'd only recently formed indeterminate relationships with a small number of jackals. I hadn't trained anyone, seen them develop, lived and fought and argued with them for years, hadn't hung alongside them, or watched them transform from barbarian youth from the hinterlands of the world to some of the finest soldiers in the center of it. I would never be solidly in the Sildoon Brotherhood, no matter how much they accepted me for what I could do. And while that gave me some pangs of loneliness, that was far preferable than overwhelming hate-fueled grief. The sunrise suddenly didn't seem so beautiful. In fact, it seemed mocking. At midday we rested again, and the scouts reported that there was no sign of pursuers behind and no blockade ahead. After feeding and watering the horses and allowing them to graze in the stubbly, rough-edged grass, and then taking some sustenance ourselves, I had the chance to finally open my writing chest and began recording everything that had happened since the previous session. Some of it was still fresh in awful clarity, but I needed to ask Vinduro some questions to refresh some points and make sure I didn't leave out any important notes. It felt so good to pick up a quill again. I might have been wearing a foul-smelling gambeson and loosed a number of bolts that had ended life. But there was no question what my true vocation was, no matter how much I played at soldier and somehow survived another day. And still, I hadn't put down 4 lines before my head started pounding, then swirling with dizziness, then pounding some more. And as I pressed on, it got nothing but worse, to the point that I felt nauseous and had to stop. I wondered if I would have a chance to do any more translating soon. But with how awful I felt, I was almost relieved when Rudgie stopped by. She started to say something, stopped, looked me over again.
"You feeling all right, Arky? Looking kind of whitish and sweaty and, not good?"
I nodded, closing up my case, and even that small movement sent tremors of pain across my skull and down my spine. I'm fine. Just took a shot to the head. I'll be fine. I corrected myself. Sort of. I'm fine. She nodded slowly.
Uh-huh. Fine it is, as you say. Anyway, Cap wants you.
I tried to stand, withstood another wave of nausea, and then steadied myself.
Well then, best not to keep him waiting.
I walked slowly, taking stock with each step to be sure I truly was fine, and not at risk to fall over unconscious or to throw up on my feet. Reggie walked alongside me, eyeing me closely, which made me try to walk taller and wobble less.
I told you, I said, I'm fine, are you up?
She said, sounding absolutely unconvinced.
So you did?
She led me away from the remainder of the company and around a small red butte. When we were out of view, I came upon the captain and Sofjian standing together, which surprised me. They didn't occupy each other's company unless it was absolutely necessary, or they were under duress. Neither of which boded well. Reggie stopped 20 paces off and let me continue the rest of the way unescorted. Which was just as well. The clouds had deserted the sky almost entirely, and the sun wasn't doing my blinding headache any favors. Braelar appeared ready to say something to his sister when he saw me approaching and waited. He looked at the case hanging by my side, then at my face.
Glad to be reunited with your old friend, I expect. Venduro told me that case, or the contents at least, saved your life. Extraordinary how things do play out sometimes. Are you whole, on the whole? You look pained.
It might as well have been written on my face with red ink, though I felt foolish, given that countless others were dealing with more egregious physical wounds, and Muldus, and Hughspear, before his demise, had fought through far more debilitating abrasions of the mind. I nodded, careful to keep it small and slow, just the same. A small head injury, Captain. Nothing serious. I am well. He continued staring at me in that entirely disconcerting way he'd mastered. Truly, I added. Braelar Twitch smiled.
You are a tragically bad liar. What is it? Dizziness? Pain?
I gave a small nod. Both, yes.
Anything else, then?
Some nausea and spots. I see spots on the edge of my vision, and it's a bit difficult to concentrate.
That sounds less than auspicious. So now I ask with some trepidation, are you well enough to resume translating? That is the critically important question.
I nearly laughed at myself for thinking he had my interests at heart.
I believe so.
The captain shook his head and clicked his tongue in his mouth.
No, no, that will never do. Either you are fit to carry out your duties, or you are unfit. There is no middle ground. Everyone in this company has a role to perform, and in many cases, others can step in to spell them or replace them entirely if they are lost. But you are rather more indispensable in your capacity. So I ask again, and recommend you do not dissemble or suffer undue bravado. Are you fit to do this thing or not, Arky?
I am, I replied, hoping I sounded more confident than I felt. I just finished bringing our account current, which left me with several other questions. He smiled again, a bit longer than usual, somewhere beyond wry and just short of humorless reflex.
But of course it did. For better or worse, that is your nature, is it not? Though in this instance, it is for the worse. We move with haste. So your questions, no matter how weighty and laden with import in your mind, will simply need to wait.
I glanced at Sofjian as she absently flicked over a small flat stone with the butt spike of her rancer. She looked at me, and I said, with respect, Captain, while my inquisitiveness might be a burr under your saddle most days, on this occasion, I hope you will hear me out. Braelar replied,
You have been taking far too many lessons from Venduro of late.
with respect, is an empty preamble designed to convince the listener to